I'm a huge fan of Lori's work and Thomas's work and Nett's work and Penny's work, and so I'm trying to get out of the way as soon as possible and more or less just lay what I hope is a good foundation for some of the principles of developing cultivar trials or variety trials. I'd like to ask that we stipulate to variety at the moment. It's just easier for me to say, so that's probably what I'll use. But in all seriousness, there are some points to be made here in the next 12, 15 minutes or so, and then we'll hear some real additional substance from the four speakers to follow. So I'm looking forward to this very, very much. I think it's not so much that I'm uniquely qualified to be here. There's quite a few people in the room who could just as easily be here, perhaps better qualified, and others who are not with us that have a lot to say on this topic. But when Ajay approached me, I was very glad to participate. Most of us are involved in some aspect of quantifying G by E and its effect on crops for one reason or crops or plants for one reason or another. Okay, whether it be directly direct impacts on yield quality or profitability or some aspect of crop behavior, it's practically impossible to escape G by E as a horticulturist, and so we're more or less always engaged in the process of quantifying those effects. Now, as far as why me or what can I possibly bring to this conversation? Since 2001, these are a few of the statistics that kind of populate my abbreviated CV with regard to running variety trials. Okay. They include peer-reviewed publications, they include scientific presentations, technical reports, and the like. When I entered my position as an assistant professor at Ohio State, germplasm evaluation was a stated objective or responsibility of the position, but so also was making contributions to the literature and doing all the other things that come along with being an extension specialist. So it was incumbent upon me to find a workable blend of satisfying the need to do variety trials and also make other types of contributions, okay? And these are just a few of the crops that I've worked with over the years in that particular capacity or in that area. It's a subset of the crops. Not all of them are pictured. So we'll not talk about any of these today specifically, but there's been a fairly wide range. Actually, that range for me personally is increasing over the last 7 years as I get more involved with grafting work. And grafting opens up a whole new kind of avenue for quote-unquote variety trialing. I just came from a presentation where we were talking about trialing 90 combinations of rootstocks and scions, so that's like variety trials squared or something. But, you now have rootstocks to consider in addition to fruiting varieties of the scion and the combinations that they can create, and, going back through the years. So that might be another dimension of our variety trialing program in years to come. As when we revisit at ASHS, we might be hearing a lot more about vegetable grafting and the germplasm work that is involved with it. So again, we might have to broaden the definition to beyond just the fruiting varieties that will now include rootstocks. So in the next 12 minutes or so, I'd like to emphasize two points, concept and practice, and these are just my takes on the process of developing a variety trial or variety trialing program, and a process that I was very keen to learn from others in developing, and that's what I'm going to share with you this afternoon. In 2002, nearly 12 years ago, Tom Williams and Warren Roberts asked the question that you see there on the screen. Is variety trialing essentially doing these variety trials a dying art? Is it a dying science? What is their perspective? And they summarized their perspective making these points. There's no question, even 12 years ago, it's continuing today, there are fewer extension people, and there are more varieties are being released by private industry, which often these companies have their own trialing program. The question is, will they engage extension? Will they engage other members? Will they engage us, horticulturists, in that process? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But they made those bona fide, and I think very, very true observations. They recommended all the time to collect only the most pertinent data, survey to standardize the evaluation process. So consider a wider perspective on the program or the trial, and be careful to avoid becoming myopic. Definitely employ statistics to improve the rigor. There's an occasional perception that variety trials or cultivar trials or germplasm evaluation can kind of free itself of some of the burdens of rigorous statistics, and that's absolutely not true. use them, and then publish the results in a timely way, and we'll come to this point in a few minutes. Dan Cantliff offered an administrator's point of view. And if we're talking about an extension-like or a university position, clearly the administrator's point of view has to be taken into account and be taken very, very seriously. So what is one administrator's perspective on that? And one who is very, very familiar with variety trials. It's his point, or made one of the points, that they don't require a large amount of intellectual input. There is a perception that, you know, that they're a relatively straightforward type of science. They do not require a lot of intellectual input. And that promotional review boards will not reward packets that lack this rigorous intellectual contribution. So how do we, if you will, convert, or how do we employ, add intellectual rigor to the variety trials would be a major question. So if important in a faculty program, Dan Cantliff was recommending that you develop a protocol or a marketing scheme based on the needs and benefits of the work, and use a multifunctional, which we'll get to here in a moment, and link to larger issues, which to me, the last phrase was the operational one. Take what you intend to do as in terms of a variety trial and link it to a much larger issue that other people could engage in and benefit from and having your information. So those are a couple of the concepts, and now we'll focus a bit on the practice. Anu asked in the same series at another ASHS meeting, is it, you know, vigor or rigor, competing goals of variety trials? I think all of us who have been engaged with them can understand these competing goals, some of which were referenced by Dan Cantliff. And she was argued for some key approaches to this, acknowledging some realities. That there's been significant change, reorganization, and consolidation within the seed industry. So even the number of partners that we will have in the process is changing, is reducing, and their particular needs are changing. They might have a more world view or a regional view rather than a local view. She was has encouraged folks to identify their target markets, and those markets may be very distant from your home state. Or there may be other areas that share similar production conditions. Minimize error throughout the entire process, of course, and variation in the experimental design, because it will improve the rigor and improve the predictability. Jason Osborne and Eric Simone, many of you know both of these authors, and they wrote an excellent piece on essentially preparing any manuscript, really, but they were focusing on the preparation of manuscripts specifically built around variety trials. And, of course, they made some very prudent recommendations, including, you know, follow the recommendations that are intended for your target audience. If it's the variety trial section of Hort Technology, read it. Be very, very familiar with the requirements of a variety trial section manuscript in Hort Technology. And, as always, ensure that the manuscript contains all of the good elements of a very carefully written manuscript. Do not contribute to the perception that it is a lesser science by producing a lesser manuscript in any way. Treat that variety trial, that manuscript that's built around a variety trial or Karlovar evaluation, with as much care as any manuscript would call for. They also suggested that one use growing condition ratings to standardize and quality control. This is, personally, to me, very, very intriguing. Consider a larger view, larger growing regions, look at weather, climatic, historical climatic weather data, production conditions, where are they replicated, what happens north to south transects, east to west transects. Develop a system, going back to what Dan Cantliff was saying independently, develop a system that other people conducting variety trials can actually employ, not just one in your own. Mike Arnold and his team also made a very interesting suggestion. Of course, many of you know Mike, and he has a very, very comprehensive program that involves a lot of undergraduate students. And so he was describing both the pros and cons, but essentially highlighting the advantages of including undergraduates more concretely in a variety trialing program. For example, it certainly underscores the three-part mission of a land-grant university when you have undergraduate students involved in your research. And it exemplifies that mission, and it can actually solve some problems For example, labor. Many people cry that the labor goes away just about the time we really, really need it. Well, you know, Mike is, I think, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I was thinking, I believe he was saying, you know, look to the undergraduate program as a potential source of assistance while you also enrich their educational experience going forward. So five key principles to conclude with. All of them are going to revolve around multi. If you have not multied out, multifunctional. Integrate the studies into larger problems. Integrate the extension research and teaching mission. It's the perception across that body of literature that I looked into before this presentation that a trial for trial's sake or to identify the best variety is still legitimate, but it may have limited value when it comes to promotion tenure, when it comes to engaging, including that work in a larger context for problem solving. As best as possible, make sure that the project includes multiple environments, maybe sites, years, or growing conditions. You know, the whole idea here is to increase the scope of inference. If I were to conduct a variety trial in Worcester, Ohio, and only in Worcester, Ohio, my scope of inference is Worcester, Ohio, and it might be important to the people in that area, but if I'm able to conduct a study that spans, as we'll hear from Lori, I think, and others, and from Thomas about a regional approach, your scope of inference now grows extremely large, and because of that, you encompass, you include a lot of other people in the dialogue about your work. So this has very strong practical and scientific merit. Do your best to recruit multiple sponsors and speak to multiple audiences about the work, you know, both the private and public sectors, maybe the commercial, of course, for commercial reasons and peer reasons. Consider the people in this room as your audience when you're designing the study, not just the commercial stakeholder. Who else in the scientific community will care about the results that I'm able to generate and the methods that I use? And with regard to the sponsorship, you know, share the responsibility. This was a bit of an uphill challenge for me when I first started. I had my sights set on a long-term, approach to that, where Ohio State would share some of the burden, growers would share some of the burden, seed companies would share some of the burden, and I had various levels of success in that, but it was very, very well worth trying, rather than appealing only to one sector to support it, and it certainly was not going to be Ohio State to fund those trials alone. Fourth, provide the data and the results in multiple formats and along different timelines. The Roberts paper that I referenced earlier, one of the main criticisms of a scientific product is that it takes so long to get out. We collect the data in 2008, we publish in 2014. Well, who cares anymore on the commercial side? So the recommendation here is, okay, package the data quickly and get it to the people in a coherent way. Get it to them, get it to those folks who need it quickly. May not be beautiful in the sense of a manuscript, but they have the information they need to make certain decisions, while also packaging it for a scientific audience perhaps later. So reach multiple audiences in multiple formats and in multiple timelines. So once collated, the data may be worthy of public consumption, but only collated with very little narrative or text to go along with it, because maybe people are interested in simply the data chart. But, of course, in a manuscript, it will be a different timeline, a different format. So package the information and tailor its delivery to your audiences. And, of course, we see this over and over and over again with the Midwest Production Guide, the Southeast Handbook. We see evidence for variety trial information developed in variety trials in both of these kinds of formats. And, of course, in industry formats like these, the Vegetable Growers News and other trade publications. We also have abundant evidence of it being of those same data being published in referee journal articles. Finally, the fifth principle: include multiple participants as much as possible. And Anu's point in that same paper that I referenced earlier was that perhaps campus-based specialists are the most prepared to lead that team. That might include extension educators or county agents, whatever your particular university's terminology may be. But campus-based specialists should be prepared to lead because they have the required skills, knowledge, and commitment to make sure that the network is established, that everyone is getting what they need from it and contributing to it. Okay? So that's a recommendation that rang true throughout her work. So a quick census, real fast, and then we'll close. Since 2000, looking at hort technology alone, since 2000 there have been 25 reports on vegetable variety trials, more on other commodities. So I want to emphasize that this is just vegetable. For field-based production, published in hort technology, 25 papers. Those papers had 19 primary authors. So we're seeing diversity there, but also some repeat, of course. Those papers originated with teams in these particular regions. You know, the Southeast is leading the charge, okay? But diversity across the range, across the U.S. in those 25 papers. And the commodities that are listed here. 11 diverse crops. 4 papers on onion and leafy greens each. 2 papers each on cabbage, tomato, cucurbit, and bean. 3 papers each on pepper and potato, and 1 on each of the 3 that are listed there. So 11 different commodities in this snapshot of 2000, the year 2000 to 2014, actually. And here are some selected examples of the application of the principles I just went through a few minutes ago. This is by no means an exhaustive list. If your paper does not appear here, please do not hold it against me. I simply went to the literature, went to those 25 papers, and selected ones that I thought illustrated one or more of the points that were made earlier. So my name is in here, so let's just ignore that. Mark Clow at the NC State team has for years led the development of a database that collates information from potato germplasm evaluation done from Maine to Florida and as far west as Ohio. They do a phenomenal job with that. And they published a report on this particular database in hort technology. So it's been a real treasure to work with that team through the years. The data in Ohio go back 35 years. The data in all those states go back, of course, at least that many years or longer. And that's an example of a whole regional team coming together and putting all the information in one basket interactively so that somebody can go and search it. And just pictures of the potato trials there. Liz Maynard, I hope she's here, there. Liz Maynard has for years coordinated the Midwest Vegetable Variety Trial Report. If you're not familiar with the Midwest Report, check it out. It's really an amazing product. 11 states have contributed or routinely contribute to the report. Liz and the Purdue team collate all of that. In the old days, if you will, there was a printed version. Now you can go online and get all of the reports every single year, going back many years. So there are all of these states that are listed here. You can search it by commodity, you can search it by author, you can search it by region. It's just a treasure trove of information. The number of reports is declining somewhat, perhaps reflecting the decline in number of people or the amount of activity, but still quite valuable. University of California Cooperative Extension, as you might expect, has done an excellent job with their processing tomato work and published that as well. Elsa Sanchez, Penn State University, did an excellent job summarizing the statewide winter squash cultivar. So we've gone from region to statewide now as examples. Tim Coulon, same way with organic leafy green work in Kentucky. Again, just some examples of statewide variety trialing programs that have been shared with the scientific community via hort technology. And Joe Masabni at Texas A&M, really remarkable tool. I mean, for a state as large as Texas, of course, probably necessary and quite useful, but has divided the state into regions, and you can literally select, put in your preferences, and come up with variety recommendations based on climatic factors and the like. So a really, really remarkable accomplishment, something to emulate. But that's just another example of a statewide selecting tool. So I know that my time is near up. Ajay was just about to stand up, so I wanted to be on the spot. So if there are time and questions, I'll be glad to take
them. No, that's fine. Questions for Matt? One burning question?
No burning questions. Enjoy.
Thank you very much.